you know, I'm reading the book for the second time, and I would urge others to do the same, because once you have the story in your head, then when you come back and read it again, you realize even more how the vileness, if I can use that word, insidiousness of it, becomes even more impactful the second reading.
Yeah, so you can see, you know, when you're on to them, what they are doing.
Right. Right.
And that is, you know, it is, it's what I spent most of my life just proving conspiracies. I don't have a conspiratorial mind. I, you know, mostly when you report, when you look into, most, you often look into conspiracies that turn out to be bunk. So this is one of those rare instances where people really were conspiring in these various plots to commit these crimes. And so the levels and the steps they would take, and these, they were playing, these were long crimes. They would play out over years, again, because they had to involve people marrying into families. And many of these crimes were never prosecuted.
How long did it take you from research to writing to finish the book?
5 years, I would say, half a decade.
And you had this living in your brain and conscience all those years?
I did. And, you know, I had a little office that became kind of an archive of all these, basically a crime archive filled with documents and transcripts and photographs and crime scenes. And I remember early on, I began to collect photographs from the victims. And initially, you know, I just had a few who I knew about, members of Molly's family. But over time, as I would learn about other suspicious deaths or murders or poisonings or whatnot, I would collect a photograph and I put it on my wall. And over those 5 years, that wall of photographs just grew longer and longer. But it was also always a reminder about what this book was about. And it was a way, you know, to keep going during those 5 years, to be reminded of all these lives that were lost.
The film, as the film went on, were you consulted, or how much were you consulted going into the film or while it was being made?
So, yeah, so, you know, I'm not a filmmaker, and I don't, you know, think of myself, I don't get involved in writing scripts or trying my hand at that thing. I really am a historian or reporter and spend most of my time combing archives and writing. And so my goal with all of these projects, and especially with Killers of the Flower Moon, was to get the project in the hands of filmmakers who really do know what they're doing. And that was certainly the case with Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio and the entire production team and the cast. I mean, just people who really understand how to make a movie. But more importantly than that, to me, was that they had, I never expect a film to be the same thing or a replica of the book. They're very different mediums. But what you do want, especially dealing with a racial injustice and an important historical story, is that they have a fierce commitment. They share that fierce commitment to the story. And I think in working with Scorsese and all the actors and production team, they really did. And they would often call me and consult me for, you know, historical records or documents. Actors would call me and, you know, asking about the real person they were playing, and could I give them any information? How did they talk? Did I have any photographs? And so I always tried to be a resource as much as possible. But for me, far more important than my participation as being a resource was that the movie production involved members of the Osage Nation. And to the best of my knowledge, that really did happen. That the Osage chief, Jeff Annie Barilliani, appointed movie representatives to consult with the film project. And so many members of the Osage Nation were involved in the film, including, you have, you know, descendants of the murder victims, to the best of my knowledge, are in the film. You have Osage with actors. I don't think they were actors before, but they have speaking roles. Some of the most powerful scenes in the movie involved them. The Osage language was used, and I know that's been a really big project of Osage leaders like Chief Standing Bear to over the last few decades to revive the Osage language. And so the fact it's used in the film, brought to life again. So to me, that element, that participation was the most important and gratifying to me that that took place.
Yeah. Did you say that DiCaprio and De Niro, did they talk to you about, did they ask you questions about this?
DiCaprio would. De Niro did not. But DiCaprio would call me and when I was on the set, speak with him. And the thing I admired about them all was they were, you know, I'm a nerd. I'm a geek in terms of, you know, just research. And, you know, all of them, including Scorsese, you know, they were like little fierce historians trying to vacuum up as much history as possible. And so anything I could share, I would. And I know there were many conversations with members of the Osage Nation over the time that they worked on the film. And I know Chief Standing Bear and others could speak to that better than I could. But, you know, in shaping the story and developing and making sure, you know, they got it right.
Well, David, I really appreciate this time and your very, very thoughtful answers. Thank you again, David. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this.